on your part.
All right, here we go. Welcome to the On Track and Field podcast. I'm JT Ayers, your host. You're in for a treat. Not only do I have on this podcast one of the best coaches in the world right now, his kid just went out and did something one of the most unbelievable things the world has ever seen. And we'll talk a little bit about that, but he's on here to talk about something that I've been a direct beneficiary from, and that's wickets. And that is the number one question I get constantly is, how do you do wickets? Where do you do wickets? Well, I have the person that developed it on the podcast. So before I get to him, On Track and Field, go to ontrackfield.com. They have everything you need to make your program the most successful. And even not just your program, but also you as an individual. My wife's a distance runner. On Track and Field hooks her up with Topo Perfect Caliber running shoes just for her marathons, as well as things that I need to walk around and do these track meets with. So they have shoes, they have equipment, they have everything you need, and it's a price that's affordable. Trust me, I just bought tons of stuff through them because they have the best price, all custom made, and the CEO even drove it down. Just check my Twitter account, ontrackandfield.com. All right, stop beating around the bush. I have Coach Kareem Wahab from University of Georgia. He's one of the best coaches in the world, and it's so cool. He's a friend of mine, and I'm glad he's here. Coach, thanks for joining me.
You're very welcome. Thank you, JT. It's a privilege to be here.
Well, you've been on the podcast before. You know the format. We're just going to dive into it. I want this thing to be practical. I want coaches to leave here with something that it's not theoretical, but it's something that they can use instantly. And that is, let's talk wickets. First and foremost, why should we be doing wickets?
Doing wickets. Well, I want to give some credit to Coach Vince Anderson because he's the first that I've learned the wicket drill from. All that I've done, I just made it a little bit more specific. Gender specific, leg length specific. But former women's sprints coach in Texas A&M, Coach Vince Anderson, was the big wicket guy, and we all learn from him, right? So why is it important? Because we consider sprinting to be a skill. A skill needs to be taught. We need to follow the rules of motor learning development when it comes to teaching sprinting. So wickets basically give me something called forced mechanics. We're not going to talk to somebody sprinting, hey, get your knees up when you sprint, or strike down the ground. We're going to put them through drills and wicket progressions for their max velocity phase of sprinting, the top speed, to force them to move the correct way. And what I love about wickets, it can be manipulated in spacings, because max velocity is a mixture between stride length and stride rate. And since we consider sprinting a skill, to really perfect any skill, whether if it's playing the piano or being a better basketball player, and you can ask basketball players, how many times do you shoot the free throw? So how can we do that with sprinting without getting somebody hurt? You're not going to be sprinting all out all the time. So now, knowing all of that, it dictates how we train. And basically, since sprinting and max velocity is a skill, we need to address it early in the training and often. And you cannot address it early and often sprinting all out. You're going to get somebody hurt. So we manipulate the intensity by jamming the spacings a little bit, where the focus becomes the first element of velocity, which is frequency. You can stand up right now, JT, and do high knees in place as fast as you can, and you're not going to pull anything. But if I have you stand up right now and sprint all out, you're probably going to pull something.
Oh, definitely.
So we work on frequency first. And over time, the progression of the wicket drill or I call it the max velocity drill, will add stride length to that frequency. So in Ralph Mann's, the biomechanist, in his book, The Biomechanics of Sprints and Hurdles, he talks in the early chapters of the book about if all elite sprinters have frequency. If you don't have frequency, you're not a sprinter. Now, the elite ones have very good stride length with good frequency. And basically, learning about all of that encourages me to address frequency first, because it's safer, and over time, open the spacing to carry that frequency, that turnover, to a bigger stride length.
Any coach listening is going to be like, yeah, I understand that. I mean, we have to teach athletes to apply force in the ground for a long period of time, and they have to apply force in the proper way, or they're going to pull a hamstring, or they're not going to be able to, or stride length's going to be too short. Well, wickets, people just throw them out there. They're like, make it 6 feet, make it 5.5 feet, make it something where the kid's running, but it's not very a long period. Now you've developed and you gave it to me and you moved on with your life. And I've been using it just, you know, something for my program. I'm seeing the direct benefit of kids being able to apply force to the ground for a long period of time. They stay fast for a long time and they're doing these repeats, 50 meters, 55 meters, depending on their trochanter. So if I want the athlete to run with the proper stride length and they can develop stride frequency, that means they need to know how far those wickets should be spaced.
Yeah.
You have told me that, and you taught me how, use your trochanter. Well, what's a trochanter and how do I measure it?
Well, it's basically leg length. It's to measure from the hip joint all the way down till the heel touches the ground. You measure each side and you get the average. And based on that, you conclude your athlete leg length. Now, if you open USATF track and field coaching manual level 2, you will see that there is a range and a relationship between the leg length and the stride length. So talking to one good friend in Germany, who is Ralph Moshbahani, and you know, I've seen a lot of numbers. So I really wanted to go to somebody with authority. And Ralph Moshbahani is one of the World Athletics lecturers worldwide in sprints and hurdles. I say, Ralph, what is the average stride length for a woman or for a man in relation to their leg length? So on average, a woman leg length is between 2.3, a woman's stride length is between 2.3 to 2.5 of their leg length. So for simple math, if a woman leg length is 1 meter, which is really long for a lady, but hey, some of them are, multiplied by 2.3 to 2.5, meaning her average stride length during the max velocity phase of a 100-meter race will be between 2.3 meters to 2.5. And for men, it's between 2.4 to 2.6. So generically, I use the average between, so for a woman, since the range is between 2.3 to 2.5, I start with 2.4. That's on average. For a man, for a wicked or max velocity drill, the average stride length is between 2.4 to 2.6 of their leg length. I start with 2.5. And we go through that progression. Press progression does not go beyond 85% of the maximum stride length. And over time, we add 2.5% in each progression. Each progression should be done 3 to 6 weeks. Why? It takes the nervous system initial adaptation 3 weeks. Moderate adaptation is about 6 weeks. Okay, full adaptation is like 12 weeks. But it's not only that. You're not going to move to the next. You still have to be a coach. As you said, some coaches just put them on the ground. We have to film from the side. You have to watch at the moment of ground contact. Are the knees together or not? Are the knees pinching or not? Theoretically, in the first progression, since you're only going 2.5, you're only going to up to 85% of the maximum stride length, the back knee will be ahead of the front knee at the moment of ground contact. And over time, as you open up the spacings, the knees will start getting closer to the pitch. But if at the moment of ground contact, the back knee is behind, and you can see the daylight between the athlete thighs from the side, that's overstriding. So those are some technical, mechanical things to look for. As I said, Ralph Mann's book and Amber Murphy's book, the latest edition was, I think, 2022, Biomechanics of Sprints and Hurdles, are just a great reference to know what angles to look for. And I worked with Ralph a little bit with USATF, and we've done some stuff with the Chinese national team, with some athletes that trained, and just he's a great reference, and his book is unbelievable. And the latest one really has all the angles and all the data to look for. So when you film as a coach, you know what to look for. So it's not an opinion anymore.
Hmm. Are you looking for the foot at all? Like where the foot strikes the ground? You want the foot underneath the athlete? If it's ahead of the athlete, it's an overstride. Yes. Is that something else you look for?
Well, it will be the faster they are, the better they are, the more technical they are, the closer the foot contact will be to the center of mass. Now, no one lands exactly under. We do it in training. We say, hey, get your foot underneath you. But it doesn't really land underneath you. It will be like probably 10 centimeters ahead of your center of mass if you really go on technical. But that's the best of the best. The slower you are, the more overstriding you are, the further that foot will be in front of the center of mass. What? Even the knee angle at ground contact, that knee needs to be slightly straighter. So athletes that strike the ground at the moment of ground contact, at the top end or max velocity phase, if that knee is too bent, I'm spending so much time on the ground. So for an example, women got to be at 165 at the moment of ground contact. And if you film your athletes and you see them, wow, they're the moment of ground contact, they're in the 130s. I had an athlete, a sprinter before, that is on the 130s, and we worked with her to get up to the 150s, and her 60 meter improved from like a 7.4s to 7.2. Learning to run tall, learning to be stiffer, doing some plyometrics and max velocity work to make sure that she can apply force from being while being tall versus having to kind of shrink and sit down to apply force.
So what coaching cues do you actually give the athletes while they're running to teach? And not just showing them film, but do you say things like, all right, get tall, push, recover? What other things do you say to help the athlete run with proper mechanics?
Stay tall. Some of them will lean back. Although in biomechanics, you need about 10 degrees forward. So you got to activate your core. I stay in the run. Don't back off from the run. You don't want to lean back while sprinting. And you don't want to break down forward. So there's like a 10 degree. And you stay in there and you stay stable. Once the thigh gets to the top, what I love about the wickets, it is a forced mechanics mean of training to basically get the athletes to move the way we want them to move versus only talking about it. So once the thigh gets to the top, the feedback is strike down, strike the ground. Have an active ground preparation phase. Ground preparation phase in the sprinting stride, it's a phase of the sprinting stride between the thigh reaching its apex till the foot hits the ground. From there to there, you cannot be passive. You just cannot let the knee completely unhinge and the foot goes completely in front of the body, then pull back. It's too late. And you're probably going to end up striking this. You're probably going to end up overstriding this way. So we want them to use their glutes. Once the thigh gets to the top, you want to strike down.
When and how often do you do these wickets, these wicket drills? What does that look like for you?
Preferably, I want to use it off season, twice a week. And on the recovery weeks, once a week. And in season, it will be probably once a week because we're competing. But if in a week that I'm not competing, it'll be once to twice a week.
Well, does that mean it's the day after a big meet? Is it part of your recovery? Is it a max velocity
day? Personally, I like to delay the high days slightly further away from the meet. Just allow the body to recover, the nervous system to be fresh again. Then we do it right after the warm up.
Oh, okay.
Usually we address speed endurance in the same day, since research shows that athletes or sprinters lose more of their stride frequency during fatigue versus their stride length. So we try to use it on the speed endurance days after the warm up before we address speed endurance, because the technical theme of speed endurance is to put your feet underneath you, no overstriding, put your feet down all the way to get to the finish line. So at that moment, wickets really serve me well when it comes to that.
Okay, that's good to know. One thing that Vince Anderson, 3 weeks ago, I just reached out to Vince and said, everybody will keep talking to me about his acceleration ladder. And he has a really nice like PDF. It is laminated. It's blue, so you can keep track of it because we always leave stuff at the track. And I reached out to him and I was like, hey, everyone's asking me on social media about this thing. Can I just give him your email address? He goes, yeah, great. Go ahead. And so I had 283 people reach out to me and I just sent this thing to Vince and Vince started mailing it out. Now, I ask you this because you have given me just basically the formula and the spreadsheet. And you say, hey, go to town, have great with this. Is this something that I'm able to share with the general public as well? Like on the record, is this something that people listening to this podcast can reach out to me and then I can then send them just what I use that you've developed with Georgia and your athletes?
Yeah, I developed it way before Georgia. I developed that when I was at Colorado State. I have no problem with that. Yeah.
That's oh, great.
Not a problem. Yeah.
Okay. So if you're listening to this, reach out to me on social media, Twitter, whatever, and I'll just send it to you. Let me know what you need. Thanks, Coach. Appreciate that. Now,
you're pretty welcome.
You have developed something with your athletes, and I just want to ask you about it. You can figure out the perfect stride length and teach them stride frequency based on their gender, their trochanter height, and their 100 meter, race. Like, what does that look like? How did that get developed, and where have you seen the fruits of it?
Well, when you know somebody's 100 meter race, you can manipulate their 30 fly. And when you look at their leg length and their gender, you'll have an idea about their how many steps are they taking, their stride length, and their frequency and all of that. And basically from there, you can develop a max velocity drill that is very specific and individualized to that person. And basically you work on their frequency first and you start adding, you know, making it bigger and bigger stride length, and you're filming. And as you're filming, you're calculating, because the spacing between the wickets is predetermined. You can start timing each five steps and get their frequency and assist their velocity and looking at the film. And hey, if they are at a specific progression in the max velocity drill with a specific leg length and they look like they're faster than the previous progression and the mechanics are awesome, what you do is make the ladder bigger by 2.5%. And work on it for a few weeks, film it, assist the frequency, look at the stride length, and now you start assessing the velocity. And as long as their velocity is increasing, you keep going and progressing with them, and the athlete dictates how far they can go, basically. I'm not saying get to a certain spacing or certain velocity and stop. No, each progression of the max velocity drill should lead you to a higher level of velocity. Till you get to a stride length that, oh, the knees are not pinching at ground contact. Oh, that's too big. That's not going to speed them up. That will slow them down. Or the velocity is not improving anymore. Then now you know, for this season, that's how far we can go. One more thing that I love or makes sense for me about that wicket progression, which has 18 wickets. The last 10 wickets are the real zone that we're working on. The first 8 wickets, they're 4 at a specific spacing, then 4 at a bigger spacing, then the last 10 are really the zone. Why? Because 10 steps roughly is about 20 meters, about, or a little bit more. When you're running 100 meters, you're not going to really hold your max velocity more than 20 meters. Does it make sense? It's usually between 50 right. and 70 or 60 and 80, depends on how good you are, right? So it's about 20 meters. So it is almost a highly technical 20 fly, if it makes sense. And you have a 9-step approach. You're running over the 4 wickets. They're smaller, getting bigger. Now you're moving the correct way. Then you hit those last 10 wickets, which that's the fly zone. So it is maximum speed development. The only difference, instead of doing it, putting cones in the track, we are controlling the movement. We're teaching the skill of sprinting while we're doing that 20 fly, if it makes sense. And the faster you are, the longer the approach will be to that 20 fly, because it takes you longer to get to max or top end speed. So that's number one thing I like about it, that it's a very technical 20 fly. Now I'm addressing top end development with good mechanics. Okay. So that's what number one. Number two, and that's anecdotal. But I did discuss it with some of the people that I trust in exercise science. Everything happens from the beginning of the max velocity drill all the way to the beginning of that last zone, the last 10 wickets, for me is a gradual acceleration. My speed is increasing gradually as the wickets open up And basically, I'm preparing and prepping and potentiating the nervous system to open up and allow me to go faster. So it is a method of speed development. Like something similar to that will be gradual acceleration, build up gradually at speed every 10 meters for about 30 to 40 meters and go for a 20 fly. I like that more than sprinting a 60 all out and developing top end. And for me, it's proprioceptive neuromuscular facilitation, just like the PNF stretching. You're basically telling the nervous system as you're adding speed, open up, get ready, get ready, get ready. And in my opinion, and it's anecdotal, I did not really read studies about it, but I did run it by some of the people that I trust in exercise science. They said they see it working. They see some potential in that working. So I'm basically trying, and I'm not trying to do a lot of reps, and I'm taking full recoveries in between, and just basically trying to develop top-end speed with less injury risk. And at the same time, it's just working on the nervous system, opening up, overcoming the nervous system inhibitories, allowing the body to open up to allow for more speed to take place, if it makes sense.
It does. Well, and let me tell people right now how, I promised to be practical and it would be something that you can use right away. I have 300 kids on a track team, and I have 138 of them are girls and boys sprinters, and their trochanter lengths are everything from 70 to almost 98 and anything in between. And that's a lot of athletes I need to teach how to sprint, and I need to help them develop, because as they're going through puberty, that freshman is going to turn into a stud their junior and senior year. So what we ended up doing is we made ropes with the your wicket system. I put duct tape at each end on the rope where the wicket should go. We roll them out, we put the wickets down, we go, and we can do these things over and over and over again. And what happens is that the athlete, you called it a skill. I 100% believe that. They learn how to sprint. They learn how to get fast. And the proof is there. They finish their races better than anybody else because they know how to sprint. Reach out to me on social media. Let me share this with you. This is going to be something that will change your system and what you do with sprinting. And you will thank me for it, because it has completely changed the way that I coach, and my athletes have benefited from it. And it's a lot of fun when your kids are winning races and they're running faster than they should be. And that's all thanks to Coach and his genius and his willingness to share. And gosh, watch what he's doing in Georgia. Is there anything else, Coach, before I let you go, that you wanted to share with us?
Hey man, there is nothing other than just I've learned from a lot of good people, you know. So there's so many now, you know, it would take forever to say all of their names. So yeah, this is where my genius come from a lot of smart people that I've learned from. So
Well, all right. Add humility to your LinkedIn profile there. Coach, can't thank you enough. Thank you for coming on the podcast. Again, reach out to me on social media, Coach JT Ayers at Twitter or Instagram, Google the name, whatever. I will get you what you need. And I love that this podcast is all about being practical and making people better. This is what you need. This is the system. And I'm excited that Coach has given me permission to share it. So without further ado, listen to Steve, our CEO, who also can run a wicked, awesome wicket on the on if in his own right. Actually, that's not true, but he'd probably pull a hamstring. But regardless, Steve, our CEO of On Track and Field and Relay Batons, will let you know how to get in contact with them on social media. And without further ado, Steve.
Thanks for listening to this week's On Track and Field podcast with guest Coach Kareem Wahab. The On Track and Field podcast is powered by RelayBatons.com. Custom engraved meat and competition legal relay batons, water bottles and tumblers. Great for team branding, fundraisers, meet awards and coaches gifts. And by OnTrackAndField.com. Your one-stop source for all things cross-country and track and field related. Competition gear, spikes, training equipment, and shoes. OnTrackAndField.com has everything you need, including our new pole vault and high jump landing systems designed by jumpers for jumpers. Check them out online or give us a call for a free quote. And make sure to check out our new website, ontrackrunning.com, your new source for competition and training shoes featuring Saucony, Brooks, On Running, New Balance, Asics, and Hoka shoes and spikes. ontrackrunning.com. And make sure to follow us on our socials at ontrack, the letter N, field, at ontrackandfield on Twitter and the gram.